friends, and welcome to Pod Return to the Waking Sands. We are a Final Fantasy XIV companion podcast where we explore the lore and story of Hydaelyn and beyond. My name is Jen, and I'm joined by my co-host and researcher.
I'm Levi.
Hello, Levi.
Hello, Jen. Today, we are concluding, for real this time, the patch 2.3 main scenario quest.
Ayo.
What happened last time, Jen?
Oh my gosh, I'm so glad you asked. It is so fresh. So last time we get a refresher course on how Aether works. Alfino decides to start recruiting for his trial company. We go around and ask a bunch of people to join. Some of them do. And that's... And Nanamo has a moment of doubt and helplessness. And we fly on an airship.
Nice.
Yeah.
Great recap, Jen. Very succinct.
Was it? Okay.
Yes. So we are back once more at the Rising Stones. Minfilia is excited about the upcoming formation of Alfino's new company. The inaugural ceremony is due to take place in a short while. Why don't we see if Slothborn needs some help with the influx of newcomers?
So we go up and we're like, hey man, we heard you might need some help. And he's like, nah. This is nothing.
It's barely anything compared to the daily influx of treasure hunters and other adventurers coming through.
Yeah, easy mode.
Kind of a diss on our recruitment abilities, but whatever.
I mean, yeah, we get like 10 people.
We got 3 people.
8 people. No, like, well, the organization
yes.
has
yeah.
8. But as we're talking to Slothborn, a woman runs up and she's panting and saying that they were just attacked by heretics on their way into Mordona with supplies.
Heretics means... In general, in this world, Dravanians, the dragon followers
right. yep.
in Ishgard.
Those who oppose the Holy See.
Yep.
So not a word we have heard very much yet in this game.
We heard it a whole lot in that Ishgard bit in Kurthus.
Yeah, it's been a while.
But not for...
But here we go. Like, yep. we're back in it. Welcome to the Kurthus segment. Anyway, the supplies that they had came from House Fortomp, and... Slothborn is like, all right, well, I'm going to send them a missive to let them know what the fuck happened with their stuff.
A living missive. That's us. We head to House Fortomp. These are our buds that we helped out with their whole false inquisitor, false accusation problem way back in that Kurthus segment.
Yeah.
So we head now to Camp Dragonhead and meet up with Lord Horchafont.
It's Horchafont.
Horchafont.
Yeah, it's not like Chitlins.
Lord Chitlins. Lord Horchafont in the large battle room with a giant map laid out. This cutscene is a bit rough and really suffers, in my opinion, from our silent protagonism, because Horchafont speaks at length and the camera cuts over to us multiple times with us just staring at him.
What I wanted to do here was take a screenshot every single time they cut to our face and we're just like... Hi.
It's real bad. It's so, like, so awkward.
He's so, like, he's saying a lot of stuff.
Yes.
And then it turns to us and we're like, hi. And then he says more stuff and it turns back to us and we're like, hi. And he says more stuff and it turns back to us and we're like, ah! It's embarrassing. Anyway.
So that aside, Horchafont font?
Do we need to fucking Google it?
I you're right. I'm sure. I'm just bad, Jen. Is it font? Horchafont?
Horchafont.
Okay.
How to pronounce. Like, I want to hear somebody. If we want to go super French with it. So we're close. We're good. We're fine. Well, okay. The French, like, they do a lot of letters that they don't even, like, say.
But the T is not one of them. The T is said. So Horchafont is happy to see us. And he says that he is very grateful that Revenant's Toll exists as it secures this approach into Kurthus and serves as a deterrent to the Empire.
Yeah, you're welcome. And, like, he understands that, you know, Ishgard, they're like, no, we don't want any part of your bullshit, Eorzea, or rest of Eorzea, but we'll certainly, like, use you in this regard. And Horchafont is like, that's not fair. So he's been supplying the frontier effort.
Yep. These supplies are one such shipment of thanks, but they were unfortunately stolen by heretics. And in truth, they become more brazen by the day.
This new unity of purpose we attribute to their leader, the Lady Iceheart. But though I have devoted significant resources to the task of identifying this woman, we have yet to learn so much as her birth name. What we do know is that the heretics speak of Iceheart in reverent tones, and would gladly embrace death rather than betray her. Such loyalty is rare indeed, and I fear to imagine what so committed a collective might achieve.
So these heretics, specifically of her organization, have been cited with increasing regularity to the West. And he's like, you should go talk to, I think it's Lord Drillmont in White Brim Front to get some details there. So
he says also that, in truth, us adventurers are better suited to dealing with these heretics than the Ishgardians. If they were dragons, it'd be one thing. But for brigands, it's another matter.
I don't know, man. I feel like, you know, you could kind of cross those skills over, not...
Let's leave it to the experts.
That's fair.
We meet up with Lord Drillmont at White Brim Front. He's the one that gave us such a headache when he was being manipulated by the false Inquisitor. But now we're buds. After we...
Yeah, he was a hard sell in the beginning.
Yes.
Very hard sell. He's like, fuck off. I'm not giving you shit. And we had to do a whole lot to get him to come around. So Lord Drillmont, he has been plagued by these heretics. They strike swiftly and then fade into the shadows, untraceable. And these people seem thoroughly under Iceheart's spell, acting with radical zeal. And they recently rescued a merchant after one of their attacks. And we should go speak to him to figure out like what they did.
There is a lot of kind of repetition in this scene about how much zeal these brigands have, these heretics have.
Yeah, like more than the average zealot. More zeal than the average zealot is the vibe we're picking up. So something that's very particular about Lady Iceheart's... What's the word?
Character, abilities?
No. Influence.
I see.
Yes.
Yes.
So we go to talk to this quote-unquote mistreated merchant. Mistreated seems like it's an undersell, but whatever. And he was attacked. His goods were stolen. Arms, armor, and crystals. Crystals? Oh, shit. Before he heard one of them say, quote, return to Snowcloak. So apparently that's where they all retreated to.
It's a miracle he survived the attack, and he'll not trust his thick skull to save him a second time.
That's cute. But yeah, he's like, the goods are gone. I'm not going out there to get them. If you want, you can, but I'm just going to stay here. Yeah. So we head off towards Snowcloak. Like, we're not telling anybody. We're just like, we're just going.
This is that kind of like snowy pass that ends in the giant glacier, essentially the Claps mountainside that bars passage west from Kurthus.
Yes. On our way there, we encounter, well, there's some dead heretics and some dead knights in the snow, and we encounter a couple of not dead heretics, and we have to fight them.
They go down very easy.
Correct. But, you know, again, the place is just littered with bodies. Like, what the fuck is happening? So further down the road, inside the, you know, this ice cavern thing, which is a really cool spot, we find a knight of House Durandair there. And he's...
There's two of them.
Well, there's the one that's called Knight of House Durandair, and then the other one is probably also a Knight of House Durandair. But yeah, there's two dudes there. And he says that we followed a raiding party here, but they all just vanished, like, into the walls. And as we're standing there, we get a point of view from one of the cliffs in this space, and there is an Elizan woman with long, icy blue hair staring down at us from a cliff. We see, like, from her nose down, we don't see eyes or anything like that, but she offers our little party a derisive smirk before she turns and walks off.
This is a voice scene with one sound. Hmph.
Hmph. Like, come at me, bros. Yeah. Very taunting. And we, being us, sense a presence. We turn and we see her walking away. And, you know, the knight's still talking. He's like, you know what? I bet they have a tunnel up there somewhere, blah, blah, blah. We don't have the manpower right there to pursue. And we're like, hey, man, I think we just saw her. She's right there. I'm like, oh, man. Yeah, like, we can't do anything right now. We can't go after her because, again, there's fucking two of us. But go back to Lord Drillmont and tell him about all of this shit, and we'll go from there.
They say there's nothing to be gained by blundering into the unknown, which I think that, given our track record,
let's
we can
go.
Disprove.
Let's go.
But no, we follow their advice, their bad advice.
I mean, this is their deal after all.
You know, we have like two skills. One of them is that thing.
Beating dudes.
Yeah.
So Lord Gilmont, he's so tired of this. He says some of his best knights were laid low by these people. So they totally underestimated these heretics. They're again, the illusion is that they're a step above a normal heretic. And, you know, the stolen supplies, that they're as good as gone. There's nothing we can do about them until we can organize something. So back to Lord Horchefont we go. He's like, oh my God, you returned. This scene, I remember this the first time I did it. And this is when I was like, oh, is my opinion of Horchefont in this moment, or up to this moment, has it been completely fucking off? Because this was concerning. This is a disturbing scene to me. The way the camera work goes from like point of view to point of view. The things. Okay, so let me just paint the picture here. So Lord Horchefont, he's like, oh my gosh, you returned. I have to admit that, you know, in your absence, I just assumed that there was going to be lots of blood and guts. Like, you died a horrible, violent, gory death. And he's gotten up from his chair and he's walking slowly around to the front of the desk. And the camera cuts to a point of view from like his head. So you can feel the movement of his walking. He's staring down at us. Well, down at me because I'm short. And this is like a really, it feels a little oppressive. It feels a little dangerous. So you're like looking up at this guy and he's walking around and he's walking behind you. And then it cuts to a point of view of way at the front of the chamber. And in the foreground, we've got these like strapping shirtless men doing their calisthenics,
doing their squats.
And we see in the distance, Horchefont slowly walking around us in the distance. And it cuts back to our face. And Horchefont is finally walking behind us completely. And we have this look on our face that's like, is this guy going to fucking shank us right now? Like, we have a look. We're like looking at him like, what is happening? And I too am wondering, what is happening?
I did not get that same vibe at all, Jen, as you did.
You know, that's fair.
The
but
way
it
you
still
describe
felt,
it sounds very ominous.
That's exactly it. And there's the music is also like,
I guess I brushed it off as being the standard Ishgard, you know,
you're waiting,
oppressive
it's like,
music.
It's setting up for. It feels like it's setting you up for something, some kind of jump scare or twist in finally you learn that Lord Horchefont is actually a secret heretic and he's going to stab you in the neck or something. That's what it felt like to me. And I'm like, oh, here we go. Here's the old switcheroo. It's going to happen. But no, everything goes back to normal. Lord Horchefont, he continues talking about stuff and he kind of leans down and asks, so, what have we learned of Lady Iceheart?
So where he's going is he's going to the map table and the camera is going to sweep across it soon enough, showing the various wooden pieces of Ishgard itself and the forces outside in Kurthus and so on. And I think that's where he's going to kind of survey this thing as we talk about this heretic problem.
Yes.
Not to next stab us.
Yes. I don't know. I would be super interested to know if anybody else had got a similar vibe from this scene. I can't be alone, right? Like, all of these things together, the totality
I'm
of these
sure
little
you're not
experiences.
Alone, Jen.
Anyway, so it's, you know, back to normal. So he's, you know, he's kind of surveying this giant map, and he says that it's very likely that her hideaway is somewhere in Snowcloak. And this is an area that it's so inhospitable. They haven't been able to survey it completely, like even on the best of days.
Right. It suffered the worst from the calamity rot climate change.
Yeah.
So that is like the worst of the new snowy Kurthus. Because recall beforehand, this place was nice and springy.
Green and lush.
Yep.
And yeah.
But no more.
I mean, as far as hideaways go, you could do worse than Snowcloak.
Right now, things have gone beyond Horchefont's purview.
Mm-hmm.
He says he's going to inform the Temple Knights and let them get involved to bring the matter to its conclusion.
As much as I would like to fathom this mystery with you, the situation has grown beyond my personal purview. I am bound by duty to inform the Temple Knights and request that they bring this matter to its conclusion. Giving the glowing reports the new commander has garnered thus far, I am certain that they can be relied upon to take appropriate action. Though Isart's true identity yet eludes us, you have provided us with a point from which to begin. Sometimes it takes but a single stone to prompt an avalanche.
Ooh, new commander.
A little foreshadowing, maybe, about this guy.
Yeah.
In the meantime, though, Horshafant is going to have a second shipment sent to Revenant's Toll.
Yes.
Thanks, bro.
Yeah. He's like, that's not fair. You guys get supplies. Excellent dude. So we go back to Mordona, and Slothborn is like, these guys are such bros. Love them. And with Revenant's Toll growing in strength and population, these kinds of attacks will only increase in frequency. And everyone, including our new recruits here, we will need to be ever more vigilant. Truth. I mean, we got like Domans there. We're going to have the Neutral Company there. The Scions are there. Like, we're a big ass fucking target now. So now Slothborn is like, obviously, I'm good. Thank you for handling this situation. I always love a jaunt into Kurthus and, you know, the mystery that is the Ishgard and their all their weird problems, their snow problems.
Snow problems.
So Slothborn is like, okay, check in with Tataru. She's completely buried in this inaugural ceremony coordination shit. And we go in and she's stoked. Like, thank God. Here are a pile of uniforms. You hand them out to all of the dudes or all of the recruits. And they know to put this shit on and then meet us in the Rising Stones for the thing.
She also wonders if the Scions will ever get uniforms.
I kind of like that. She's like, well, a well-funded organization is a well-dressed one, I suppose. That's hella foreshadowing. And I love that. So we distribute the uniforms to everybody. And we see the people that we talked to. Yep. And then there are a number of new faces to us as well that apparently, like, you know, either through word of mouth or, you know, Alfino or somebody else kind of recruited these people.
When we meet up with Allianne, she says that her grandpa Isildur has finally retired. So he's Yay. Out for good. He was honestly risking things by adventuring.
Good.
Way to quit while he's ahead.
Yeah, he's going to like chill and chill for the rest of his days. Good.
And she's excited, though, to make her own path.
100%.
So welcome.
Yeah.
Real, the former Company of Heroes guy, makes another reference to that one time that we whistled.
Hey, I remember that.
Looking for me, was ya? I'd suggest giving a whistling.
See, that's great. You know, that's how you build relationships.
There are a few converts from the other Grand Companies. I think one from every GC mm-hmm. is also here.
Not that they're converts, but they're like, I'm gonna do both. Like, I don't understand how you kind of balance.
I don't know if they are doing both.
But they're hella in their uniforms. I don't think they quit. They're just
I think they kind of have to quit because the point is that they're not going to be loyal to their nation.
How could they?
I think that they are just wearing their old clothes as they are showing up here.
They literally just
in.
Like walked off the job. Like, fuck you guys. I'm going to Mordona.
Pretty much. Yeah, right. I think so. I mean, they don't say for sure either way, but that's the impression I got.
Because when Alfino was asking us, you know, to do recruiting, like, hey, you know, like ask everybody, ask people of the Maelstrom, ask people of the Immortal Flames, etc., as if like it's almost like they would be on like in the reserves.
Yeah.
You know, they would be like doing their day job. Then when we need them for this organization, we would call them to action for whatever that is.
That's possible too. I think that if that's the case, though, that's setting us up for failure, because if there's a time when the national interests are 100%. Opposed to international interests,
like they're just gonna let their guy like go do
yeah.
Alfino's shit. And not, yeah, that doesn't work. But I don't know. We didn't build this stuff.
Sure. Well, anyway, apparently one recruit already has been made captain. This is a white-haired Alamegan named Ilbert, who tells us that it's an honor to be here.
Yeah. I'm like, oh, hey, new face. Apparently you're the captain. Welcome aboard.
He seems like he's got some experience. He talks a bit about how uniforms help to kind of build morale and build cohesiveness.
He's dressed like he came straight from like the front.
Yeah.
He's got hella armor on. So great.
And then we find Laurentius, the former Wood Wailer trader, with a group of recruits up on the wall.
Mm-hmm.
This is very funny.
He's the one. Well, no, these aren't recruits. These are just random like archers. So, and they're always there. They're just part of the scenery, right? There's like the south, I think the southeast exit from Revenant's Toll, where like this is where you go to head to St. Quinnox's Find. And then there's like a walkway up above the arch there. And there's three archers and they're all like leaning out over the edge of the battlement and like, you know, with their hands on their foreheads, kind of like scanning the landscape. They're all doing this. And Laurentius is standing behind them, but he's doing the exact same thing. He's just like, I don't know what we're looking at, but I thought this was cool to do. It's really cute. And I'm like, maybe you're not so bad, but he's very excited to get the uniform. And it was just cute.
After passing out uniforms, we report to Elfino, who is prepared to make his announcement. We gather in the Rising Stones. So the recruits are all assembled now in their new uniforms. They look similar to the Maelstrom in style, especially the hats, but they're colored white and blue with black trim.
It's a very bright blue. It's a bright blue. It's ultramarine.
Yes.
Technically. Yeah. So Alfino stands in front of the assembly there and he gives, you know, a rousing Alfino branded speech. And we finally learn the name of the organization.
The Crystal Braves.
All right, here we go.
Comrades, your presence here this day signifies the momentous choice that each of you has made. With your strength now pledged to the Scions of the Seventh Dawn, you are beholden to no single nation. You stand as the vanguard for a united Eorzea. From this moment forth, I declare you Crystal Braves. Let us mend this fractured realm and face our enemies as one. Whether it be the Beastmen and their primals, or the conflict in Cartanoe, it is plain that the nations of Eorzea cannot solve the problems which plague the realm. Thus does it fall to some few heroic souls to succeed where they have failed. Come, take your place at the Scion's side as guardians of Eorzea, and together we shall fight for the freedom of all!
After the ceremony.
In the after party.
Right? Yeah, everybody's like milling around, you know, clapping backs, spanking butts, high-fiving, whatever.
Minfilia and Alfino meet, and Minfilia gives Alfino a Crystal Braves salute.
There's like some self-congratulations going back and forth here. Yeah.
Which is an upward fist held in front of her. It's kind of cute.
Yeah.
She congratulates him as commander, but he says, please. He's not going to be leading any battles here.
Thank God.
But she says, we are of the same purpose, so let us join hands and do what must be done to save this land. So we now return to the Solar with Minfilia to debrief.
And she gets a call. And the call is about the Isle of Val. And her worst fears are confirmed. The entire Isle of Val has disappeared. However, the good news is that her friend Kryl has survived, albeit in a coma. But she's stoked to hear that Kryl is still around.
I don't think we know who Kryl is yet.
No, only in the context that Minfilia has a friend who is a student of Baldessian.
Like we learned just now. Yeah. Yes.
So the etheric disturbance that was observed at the disappearance of the Isle was disturbingly close to that of the Ultima Weapon. So does that mean that Ascians are involved here as well? Probably. She then asks us if we have heard anything from the Mother Crystal since our battle with the Garleans. And we say no. There's total radio silence there. And she says, same. And she wonders if Heidelin silence means something bad is happening. It's just like, it's a lot. It's a lot all at once, you know.
Such silence portends naught but ill.
Likely.
We cut over to Horshafont now. He's getting an update from a scout atop a snowy hill overlooking Ishgard itself.
So suddenly he turns his head to, like, almost like he heard something. But he turns his head and he sees the whole of Ishgard in the distance, and he kind of gazing out at the city. And while he's gazing out at Ishgard, he says, "The winds are uncommon fierce this day."
We now cut over to a place inside Ishgard directly. We can assume.
We assume, yeah.
We're inside a grand cathedral of some sort. An extremely pope-like Elizin sits upon a throne in a hall with dozens of fully armored soldiers. This is what I was talking about last time, Jen, with there being so many character models in one scene. Hmm. The most so far in the game. There are so many soldiers in here.
Yeah.
And they're all assembled in ranks before this bethroned Elizin.
This is the oldest Elizin we have ever seen.
Also that. Suddenly, when there was no one before, now we see that this Elizin is flanked by a pair of Asians, Laha Brea and Elitibus. We zoom out again, and they're gone. They're implicitly working behind the scenes here.
Great.
The Elizin thumps his staff on the stone floor, and the knights all turn towards the middle of the room and point their spears upwards at an angle, forming a passage beneath their weapons. The end. For now.
Yep.
And now that we've finished this stretch of MSQ, Jen, we can unlock Ramu Extreme.
Yeah.
We get our unlock from Serpent Lieutenant Scarlet outside the Adder's Nest.
And the news is Ramu walks the Twelve's Wood yet again. You don't say. We bested him in battle before without incident, so why is he back? Well, let's go figure it out. We're going to go meet Delexia in Little Solace, who will then inform Frixio, and we'll get the lowdown.
So the elder Frixio shows up now, and he talks us up a lot. He talks about how we impressed Ramu with our strength and how all the other walking ones think so highly of us. But the touched ones summon Ramu again with far more crystals this time. The elder Frixio doesn't think that the Thunderous One is going to bring judgment to Gridania, given our deal that we made. But even so, he still drains the land of ether, so we gotta deal with that problem.
Yeah.
He paints like a big picture of like how crops will fail and everything will die.
Like,
and
people will fight. We understand. We know what the stakes are here.
We get it. Thank you. So we head back to that raw etherite and we boop it and we unlock the striking tree Extreme.
What?
Thank you to the people who joined us on this extreme trial. This was kind of a BS trial, honestly.
Oh, it's the worst.
But everyone stuck through it. We got the clear. So good job, everyone. Fuck you, Ramu.
Yes.
Thank you, in no particular order, to Seiyo Mihara on Dark Knight. This was their first time tanking content like this. So great job,
this
Seiyo.
This was a rough one. Just to start doing tanking, because there's some tank swap bullshit and it's really hard.
Yes.
So way to go.
Yep, great job. And we also had Tepontau Jussel on Gunbreaker Pro Tank.
I like that Tepontau, they were like, "I fucking hate this fight. God damn it, I hate this fight." I think they said it like four times.
Yeah.
And I'm like, "But you volunteered, man." Like, he's just in it for the lulls.
They're a good sport.
Yeah.
Like, then
we're not doing it for the fight, we're doing it for the fun.
Kenshin Tier on White Mage, co-healer.
Is it Tier or Tire? It's probably Tier. Maybe, I don't know.
It's Tier, I believe.
I believe too.
Oroki Fanon on Dragoon. Raven Ghostpaw on Samurai. Vestal Gorgonoth on Bard. And Jen played Ninja.
Otis Olding.
I played Scholar.
Nice.
Thank you, everyone. Great job. It was rough, but we got it done.
It was bonkers.
Yes. Speaking of, this fight has pretty much the exact same mechanics as the regular slash quote hard mode.
Kind of like exactly the same.
It plays so differently.
Turned
it's
up
wild.
To 11.
Yeah, it just everything feels different, even though they're the exact same fucking mechanics. It's crazy.
Yes.
So this fight is not like a set rotation of abilities. It's more like you gotta kind of go with the flow. That's my kind of overall guideline for this. You can't have prescribed actions. You got to look around and react to things as they come out. So all the stuff gets combined together, like every mechanic you see in the first phase, except for one. And if you get them down, great. If not, then you're going to die. Also, in no particular order, we have Chaotic Strike, which is just like beforehand. Two players will be targeted. They'll get like big target markers on them. And they will get hit by chaos, which means that person will not be able to act for a full minute. However, on top of that, these people are going to wander towards Ramu, and Ramu will soon drop a big fat point-blank AoE at his feet. This will one-shot people with chaos on them.
Yeah.
To break them out, you got to drop another damaging effect on these people. So we had a spot marked here on the right side of the arena. If you get Chaotic Strike, stand here. And then someone will break you out.
Mm-hmm.
And the people who get these targeted AoEs are random. So you can't have like one person being the breaker-outer. You've got to kind of go with it.
Yeah.
Sometimes there'll be like an AoE, like a ground AoE dropped on them. Sometimes there'll be people with the AoEs. You've got to just figure it out as you go. It's just observing and reacting.
Yep.
But still, we did great with that management. A couple times, no one got broken out. We had some healer rescues pulling people out of the AoE after they were wandering in.
Yeah, a couple times we were like, yeah, people got by it. And then there was like too many people wanted to put their electricity.
Too many helpers.
Yeah, which kills people.
Yes. I don't think I said it, but this was on min eye level for most of the fight. So
felt like it.
Yeah, it's rough, high damage, very punishing, two mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that. And then Thunderstorm, that's just like the bunch of AoEs on the ground on people. All fine. Just, you know, spread out. Don't overlap AoEs. Easy. Except that this will then leave these lightning balls, these like, you know, floating ball lightnings wherever the AoE struck. These lightning orbs are crucial to succeeding and also the most infuriating mechanic. So just like in normal, the lightning orbs will power up Ramu's raid wides. So the more orbs are out there in the wild, the more powerful Ramu gets. You need, however, the tanks to each collect 3 orbs to get the surge protection buff. So top priority above anything else is that both tanks must have that surge protection. If you collect 3 orbs in short succession, you get that 1 minute long buff. If you collect any orbs after that, you get a stacking debuff that makes it harder to heal you. It's bad. Don't do that.
Yeah.
Tanks got to get that shit ASAP. The main tank needs it first, and then the off tank, because both tanks need to swap. Ideally, the person with aggro will have the surge protection on them at all times. The off tank should taunt Ramu onto them before the main tank's buff expires. And then in the best case scenario, the off tank grabs more orbs, gets new buff, repeat endlessly. That's all good, because if Ramu is on someone that does not have that buff on them, he drops one shot kills constantly on people, like all the goddamn time. So if you have aggro and don't have that surge protection buff, you will die.
Yeah.
And this was how we wipe most of the time. There was some issue with the lightning orbs collection, whatever, phase change, no orbs being around. And Ramu just starts one-shotting people left and right. Can't protect it. Can't invuln it. You need that buff. The tanks need the buff to survive it.
And you think, like, you know, Good King Mogamog the 12th is a lot to juggle and you're running around screaming, everything's on fire. This is so much worse.
Yeah. Obviously, tanks need the buff. Great. They get dibs. But then there are far more orbs in existence than the tanks need. So you'll need to have times when the DPS and so on need to collect a few orbs. These people do not want to grab 3 orbs. If you get 3 orbs, you get that minute long buff. If other people get this, it's bad actually, because you want them to be free and unbuffed to be able to collect more orbs. If they don't get 3 of them, the kind of stacking up buff falls off in about 10 seconds. So you collect a couple orbs, let your buff fall off, grab more orbs. This keeps the overall orb count managed. But because things are so fucking chaotic, I ended up calling time for tanks, time for orbs. to try to keep people aware of what time it was. Yeah, because
sometimes you wanted people to get rid of all the orbs. Sometimes you needed all the orbs out for the tanks.
Yep. Yeah. And this is unforgiving. If there are not enough orbs out there and the tanks are losing their surge protection buff, you are going to wipe.
Yeah.
You need to have the buff up at all times. If you don't, it's over. Rough stuff there. That's pretty much it for the first phase. You just got to manage orbs and you got to dodge AoEs and you have to knock out the Kanak Strike people. You got to free them from their stupor. Once you get all that done, there is the ads phase. This is really rough.
This was the hardest. This was the biggest bottleneck for us.
Yeah. So during the ads phase, we get a fuck ton of mini removes called Gray Arbiters, just like in normal mode. This is chaos, though. So every mechanic happens during this phase. Kanak Strike, the random AoEs, the player AoEs, the one-shot tank kills.
Without... The electrification of the water.
Right. These Gray Arbiters, they're in the water. But if you're standing in the water when Ramu does his big thunderstorm ability, will make the water electrify and you will take heavy damage, if not death.
So much damage. I died so much to this one because, you know, melee. So I had to be in the water. So it was super annoying. And it was like, okay, everybody, we all agreed we're going to start at the ad on the north and work our way clockwise. We all can like focus. But it didn't matter. Because everybody was dealing with so much other random bullshit. There was like maybe one, maybe two people on an ad at a time. It was like, it was painfully slow, this process. And I think that's on purpose because like it's the DPS check. You have just enough time to get rid of all of these ads before he does his like Midian Rage thing.
Yeah, the Judgment Bolt.
Yeah. So anyway, you know, I'm going in, I'm kicking, and then I run out. Just in time for the water to get electrified. And then I run back in. I'm like, kick. And then I run back. It was just a constant battle, like running in and out, using my ranged shit when I could. But like, it felt bad because I had to like stand on the grass for most of the time, just doing my shit fuck little like dagger throw. Pew, 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 pew. Cause I'm waiting for my mujos to get back up. Yeah. Anyway. And that was like everybody's problem. Like everybody was dealing with the same bullshit.
So Judgment Bolt is either a one-shot guaranteed wipe if there are any Gray Arbiters up, or like a little tiny slap if there's not. It's like Judgment Bolt.
It does nothing.
Yeah, if you have the ads killed. The only other mechanic in the fight, if you can make it past the ads phase, is Rolling Thunder. This will tether two players together. It works just like normal mode, where one person needs to grab three orbs to break the tether. While these people are tethered, any actions will cause them to take damage, heavy damage, and they will die. So if you can't cast spells, you can't do whatever. And there were times when both healers got tethered, and that is some fucking BS.
That is some BS.
It is.
That's some ARR BS.
Yeah, really. Like, this is not feasible because the tanks must have the orbs first. You can't have tethered people grab orbs if the tanks don't have their buff because they're going to die, and then the whole party will wipe because there's no tanks. So... we got to stick around doing shit all while the tanks grab their orbs. Once they're buffed, then the Rolling Thunder people can grab their orbs. And if two healers are sitting around doing nothing during this shit fuck lightning fest.
It's really bad.
Same deal. Like, we had both healers getting Kanak Striked too. We had tanks who were trying to collect orbs get Kanak Striked and like be stunned grabbing orbs.
Total mess.
There's no correction for RNG in this. There's no like, okay, so we're not gonna lock a tank down before the tank busters come out because they need to have time to get orbs.
I mean, like in Savage, you can have contingency plans for this shit, but that's because it's designed that way.
Yeah.
And in ARR, it's just a big festival of fuck.
There are like legit unwinnable scenarios in this fight because we had times when we had a phase change and the tank buffs were falling off, but Ramu hadn't cast his thunderstorm yet to make new lightning orbs.
Yeah.
So we had times when the tanks had no buff, there were no lightning orbs out there, and we're sitting around watching people get one shot to death because they can't do anything about it. There's nothing to actually collect to mitigate this.
Yeah.
So the fight has built in fail states to it. It is really like a kind of a cheap ass fight. IMO.
I agree.
That said, though, on our clear, we actually had that scenario happen where we had the phase change. There were no orbs and the tanks were dying, but we got enough reses back on that we were able to actually recover that by getting a tank res, get them orbed up, and then proceed.
Yeah, Ramu, meh.
Yeah, Ramu suck. There's one more ads phase after that. Same exact stuff. But if you have the first stuff down and RNG doesn't screw you, then you got it down. It became, after a certain point, more a matter of, will we get lucky or at least not get unlucky versus are we good enough? Because we had the mechanics down. We just had to stop getting screwed over by the orb shortage bullshit and other kind of bad luck scenarios. But we got it. We got the clear.
We did.
Good job, everyone.
Wasn't this somebody's like first extreme?
Yeah, I think it was...
Kieran? Kieran. I don't remember, but I feel like I saw
Kenshin,
that
I think.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think so. Don't want to call someone out of turn, but I think that might have been the case. After we defeat Ramu, extreme, we then report back to Orion J about our extreme experience. And he says that from our account, he fears that the sylphs, the touched ones, also dabble in sacrificial ritual. We may recall way back from the Primal Nature, etc. quest line that the powered up primals were summoned through a living sacrifice that essentially infused the primals with the emotion sacrifice person.
What was the name of that little...
It was like a ritual focus or something like that, or a fetish or something similar.
It was a fetish, yeah.
So apparently the sylphs, probably from Asian Thumbs on the Scales, also practiced the same primal empowerment ritual to bring back extreme Ramu.
Mm-hmm.
Still, says Orion J, we shall prevail, warrior of light. By the radiance of thee and thy companions, we shall prevail.
That's some flowery shit, dude.
Yeah, but that's Orion J.
Indeed.
So that's all we got for today, Jen.
Like, it's so flowery, it makes me insecure. You know?
I don't know,
like,
actually.
By thy radiance. I'm like, oh, stop. Shut up.
By thy radiance, Jen.
Blech.
Any closing thoughts, Jen, on Ramu or on the MSQ?
Yeah, I'm just really excited for the Crystal Braves. It's a force for good.
Yeah, it is.
Mm-hmm.
Great.
Great.
Well, I recall from my first playthrough being so happy to see the first hint of Ishgard. Because yeah. I had no spoilers, but I knew that Heaven's Ward was the next expansion. And I knew that that took place in Ishgard. I was slogging through so much.
It's given us a little something, like, finally, like,
yeah,
he's like, here's, like, just keep on trucking. Okay, this is, you're gonna get here soon, we promise. And we get little hors d'oeuvres of Ishgard, and it's always just real good.
Yep, it's like the beacon of driving light through the darkness of a realm reborn.
It's inspiring me to press on.
That said, the game really has picked up its storytelling, like we said, I think last time or a few times now, whatever. Now that we're in the middle of the patches, it's much better than it was in the heart of A Realm Reborn and in the early patches too. So even though there might be some sort of quibbles about nuance and story points, them being a bit heavy-handed or them kind of breaking plausibility, whatever, overall, though, it's still a much better experience now than it was, and I'm still enjoying playing through this patch content right now, except for Gridania.
Oh my god,
so boring. Except for that, it's a good time.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Any other thoughts, Jen?
Mm-mm.
Okay, well, thank you, Jen. Thank you again to our extreme party, and thank you, everyone. Next time we are picking up with our Palace of the Dead series, going right into our series ASAP. So we'll be playing through the Tam Tara Deepcroft hard next time.
And that will do it for today's episode. Thank you all so much for listening. If you want to get in touch with us, you can at podreturnffxiv@gmail.com or check the show notes for our Discord. Get in there. Join us for group runs, coordinate your own group runs, share your glams, talk about literally whatever. It's an amazing group of people and they're very nice. So get to know. And we also have our Patreon, patreon.com/podreturnffxiv. And for $1 a month, you get access to some bonus content that we release. All of the seasonal events are talked about there. We have our Final Fantasy XI series, Vanadiel Vansplainer, that is published there. And then any other random shit we decide to talk about. So give a listen. And with that, we hope you enjoyed the episode. Have a good day or night, and we will see you next time.